major meals, real eight. We'd gone as far as when you were taking food forward under quite heavy, heavy artillery fire.
The previous night, while we had been waiting to come up in a field about half a mile back from the crossing to the Dorjele railway station, we came under fire of very heavy caliber artillery. It was reckoned to be naval caliber artillery coming from Cabourg. Very unpleasant indeed. Chaps felt that their slit trenches were hardly any protection. Then when we eventually went forward and delivered our food, the fire that we drew in moving around was much lighter. It seemed to be 88 millimeter, not heavier than that. The following day, we were asked to move into the battalion position. Now, the railway station is a railway station to Dodgele, but the village in which that railway station lies, which is better known in the history books, is Puteaux-en-Auge. Puteaux-en-Auge. So we stayed all night quietly at in Puteaux-en-Auge, and the next day the battalion went over a bridge which had been constructed by the engineers across the canal and up into Dodgele. And we found Dodgele deserted by the enemy, but on fire. The whole town was ablaze. It was rather a sensation driving up the main street and feeling the intense heat of the buildings that were burning. It was quite incredible. And while we were going up through Dodgele, there was a lot of casualties, obviously commandos, coming down the road from in front of us. But we were moving headlong anyway. And it was about this time that General Gale issued his order called Flying Column. What he wanted us to do was to abandon every single item of stores that was not in any way to do with the operation. That meant any tables, chairs, any other welfare amenity we had collected on the way had to be thrown overboard, make ourselves as light as possible, and get far forward on the tail of the enemy, who was retreating very fast, as quickly as we could. Now, we moved as a battalion, transport together with the chaps on foot, moved steadily that morning until we came to a valley where we could hear the German five-barrel mortar being used, a very terrifying noise when it goes off, terribly terrifying noise. There again, we stopped, we made a meal, and I took it up myself in the jeep to the forward companies. We were in contact with the enemy. It was not pleasant because we didn't really know where the enemy was. It was somewhere around. We were chasing him. Then later that night, we moved on to a point which was in a field on the main axis just south of a village called Ambo, A-N-N-E-B-A-U-L-T. The 8th Battalion actually captured this village, but we laid about half a mile away from the village. And in that village, there is a crossroads, a very important crossroads. Napier said, tomorrow morning, we are going to attack at dawn. The whole battalion is going to attack at dawn, and we're going to go on up to the crossroads and destroy any enemy that's still in that area. So we weren't aware at the time that the 8th Battalion had sort of completely captured Dodgele, and we did expect to find enemy on this crossroad just outside the village. Now, Napier asked me to issue rum. I issued hot rum in hot water, hot rum to everybody. This went down very, very well indeed, and we all got a fairly good night's sleep.
Was it the normal rum ration? Are we always
It's an extra rum we got hold of. This is the rum that Napier asked me to go down into the back area and fetch. It was extra rum. Next morning at dawn, the most peculiar thing happened to me. Apparently, according to the adjutant, I got up and I marshalled all the administration people with their rifles, bayonets, to take part in this attack. And then, on my own, I walked off in the direction of the enemy. Apparently, nobody saw me do it, but I walked off on the line of attack on my own. And I was eventually found fast asleep with my feet in the air right on the enemy wire. And anyway...
So you were sleepwalking?
I sleepwalked in that direction. Anyway, I reported to Napier, and he said, look, I've got some prisoners for you. Take them back to division and then get some sleep. And so I took these back to division. By that time, we found a farmhouse, and I found a decent apple tree, lay down under it, and I slept hard right until evening time.
So this...
Through the whole day.
This thing was just caused by fatigue.
Exhaustion. Just simply exhaustion. I slept right into towards the enemy. I was very lucky not to get picked off. Very lucky not to have given the game away that there was an attack coming in. The attack, by the way, did not hit very many men. A very small party, and those that weren't killed were rounded up and taken prisoner. I took them back to division.
And that was... Do you know the date of that attack in the Ambo area?
About the 23rd of August. If you match it up with the 8th Battalion War Diary, you'll know exactly, because it was the following morning. They had terrible casualties because their headquarters group, that's clerks and people like that, about 8 of them got caught by a burst of these multi-barrel mortar bombs. And it just looked like a... It was a horrible sight, just like a butcher's shop lying on the ground.
What were the Nebelwerfers, what were they like?
Well, of course, they're not Nebelwerfer, really. We call them that. Nebelwerfer means smoke thrower. They don't throw smoke. They were throwing HE in large quantities. It's a very big bomb. Remember that. And all five go off. And it goes off with an enormous whoosh that, you know, you really can hear. And it's almost ghostly when it goes off. And then, of course, next thing you do is to wait for the crumps. And this lot of the 8th Battalion were very badly caught. I mean, there's not a man left living in there. There's about 8 people all chopped up by them. A dreadful sight. Anyway, we settled at this farmhouse, and the farmer's wife gave the officers lunch that day. It was a wonderful lunch we had, and she produced coffee and stuff like that, which she had hidden from the Germans all these years by burying it. And then we moved on. The next day, the battalion moved on. We separated. I had to go by road, and Napier said, do the best you can, beat off any attacks you get, and gave me a rendezvous to meet the chaps who were going on foot the other side of Pont l'Évêque. So the transport was moving into Pont l'Évêque, which had been captured, and then we crossed the Touques on a bridge which consisted of 2 enormous metal strips. You just put one set of wheels on each and went straight across the river. A very narrow river, very easy crossing. Got across, joined up with the battalion. There we settled for a while, and I can't remember the name of the area, but it would be somewhere south of Berzeville. We were stood for about 2 days in this place while we had word from brigade that we were to get ready to be taken into the back areas to be equipped with parachutes and to come back again and make an attack, an airborne attack. Maps were produced. We marked our maps. We looked at it. There wasn't a very great deal of enthusiasm as far as I could see. But after we'd spent 24 hours talking about it, the attack was off. It was cancelled.
Do you know why?
No, I don't know why. They just said I think perhaps because the enemy was moving too fast, and it would be could be an expensive waste for an enemy that was moving fast. So the next day after that, we trudged for hours on end through the night. I had a visit from General Gale. I was following up the column, and his jeep came down the road and stopped. And he knew me. He said, "Oh, Mills, everything all right?" I said, "Yes, sir." And we talked to him. He said, it's going well. It's going very well. We'll soon see him off. Anything else before I go?" I said, "Yes, sir. Please, would you take your jeep off my toe?" I had stood rigid to attention when I saw him. He'd driven up to me. He was driving the jeep, and the wheel was resting on the toe of my boot. And that shows the strength of army boots. I wasn't hurt. I was just immobilized. He never forgot that.
What was he like? What did you think of him?
Oh, jovial chap. Jovial, decent fellow. Very decent chap.
Competent?
I thought General Gale was extremely competent.
So what happened next?
We trudged on through that night, and we managed to make the breakfast for the troops. We made breakfast, which we let them get ahead of us.
I mean, it's about time probably to ask. How did they make breakfast? What was the cooking system?
We got the cookhouse, as it were, right up as far as we could, behind the foremost of our troops. We stopped, and they got ahead of us while we made it, and then we took it up to them in jeeps.
And what was the cookhouse?
It consisted of these petrol burners, mainly, and normal cooking utensils, which we just put down on the ground and started cooking. Yeah, we did. We cooked a breakfast, and we got it up to the troops, and in addition to that, we actually made their haversack ration. So, first of all, we issued the breakfast to them, and then we took a jeep full of haversack rations, or maybe a jeep and trailer by that time, right up in front, and then stopped it. And as chaps came along, we were handing them out to them on the road, shoving their haversacks. It wasn't done too badly, that. We were quite pleased with that. So then by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we'd reached a high point from which we were going to do an attack across a railway line, down a very steep hill, over a railway line, and up the other side towards Berzeville, Beuzeville. Preparations were made for the attack. It began, I think, about 5 o'clock in the evening. The administrative group, my group, were asked to follow as closely as we could with boxes of ammunition. So every one of us had a box of ammunition. The RSM was with us too. And we lugged this ammunition down the hill and straight up the hill the other side, and we were there. Napier was very surprised how quickly we were behind the behind the troops which had gone in on the attack.
What had happened?
One or two Germans were killed on the railway line. One or two of our people were killed. It was the resistance was light, but we got to the top of the hill and there they stopped. Now,
And that, the date of that was what? Whereabouts are we there?
26th of August, 26th, 27th of August.
And what happened there?
Then, the next morning, I was asked, I was told that Birdsville was clear, the town of Birdsville, to go into Birdsville and locate quarters for the battalion. So, I packed up my small party of transport and drove into Birdsville, never saw any Germans except dead ones. Drove into Birdsville where the whole town was in the square. Well, of course, our vehicles were mobbed by girls climbing on them and all that sort of thing. And out of the voice of all this French mob was an American who said, "Say, what's going on around here?" And I turned around, and there was an American airman. They had been, he'd been hidden in the town for weeks on end. So I took him with me, and eventually he found his way via our headquarters back to division, etc. The other interesting thing was that the Mackie came to us, and they said, "Look, for your officers' mess, we want your officers to occupy Chez Bayeur." Now, this was the this was a family, Bayeur, B-A-I-L-L-E-U-L. They had been collaborators. They said, "We want you to have this house as your officers' mess." And the troops were put in quarters, which I think was sort of like the municipal municipal leisure center down the road from there. Anyway, we went into this house, and it was unbelievable. The silks, the satins, the jewelry, the stuff that was there for people to help themselves to. And they said, "Please help yourselves to everything you find." This family was shot last night as they tried to escape with the enemy. We shot them. They were traitors. They were collaborators. You must take everything. And various people I know helped themselves to bits of jewelry. I filled a mortar bomb box full of silk underwear to take home to my wife. And it was interesting to see that our oldest officer, well into his 30s, well and truly married with a squad of kids, he rolled up the lino from the kitchen to take home. The difference between a recently married bloke and one who'd been married for a long time. And of course we took away a lot of stuff that eventually found its way into the battalion sergeants and officers' mess in the UK. We were asked to do it. We had no compunction of stripping the place. It was excellent. Then we moved the whole battalion onto the outskirts of Birdsville into a farm. We stayed there for 2 or 3 days. The French were very hospitable. Various farmers asked us to go and have meals with them. We were able to go into Honfleur. That's H-O-N-F-L-E-U-R, the beautiful little fishing port for the occasional meal. And after a few days, Napier told us that we were going to go back to England.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I think we'd, we were, I think we were all fairly relieved to be, you know, being offered a rest after that hectic rush forward that we had. It wasn't, it was quite pleased to be going back. And we made our way back to the coast. We took a couple of days over that. One day to the transit camp, next day from the transit camp down to the port. We went out to sea in a small craft and climbed up scrambling nets onto a ship that's brought us home. When we came home, there's a lot of sorting out to do.
Now, did you go back to Kiwi Barracks?
Back to Kiwi Barracks, and there's a Christmas-style lunch waiting for the battalion, organised by the people who've been wounded and were waiting for us to come back. And the whole battalion was to be sent on leave. In fact, we did. We were We were shot off on leave extremely quickly. The whole battalion were given leave. And while we were on leave, the operation at Arnhem took place. We heard about it on our wireless sets while on leave.
What did you think? I mean, you must have taken a sort of a professional interest.
Well, we thought about this about Arnhem. We had no idea how badly wrong it had gone, but we knew jolly well that when early July there had been word come out that we were to prepare to be pulled out for another operation, to go back to England for another operation, and then it was cancelled almost immediately, that there must have been consideration of using some of the units of the 6th Airborne Division in Arnhem. So, you know, the failure of Arnhem hadn't really dawned upon us, but we came back to Bulford and started getting back to normal barrack life. And then I was sent for by Napier one day, and he said, look, there's a chance of immediate promotion for you. He said, they want an officer, and it's a major's job, who will take charge of the rehabilitation of men of the airborne forces who have been mentally scarred in battle but are capable of being rehabilitated to do a useful job. So he said, would you look at it? Would you go and see a Brigadier Money? And I went to see him, and he told me about the job, and he said that they thought that I was the ideal person to handle it for some reason or other. So with my file still existing to go to Staff College eventually, I thought that, all right, I'll go in for this. And in a few days, I reported to Hardwick.
And this was based at Hardwick Hall again?
Hardwick Hall, and it was called the Reception Company. And I took it over with immediate promotion, and I certainly did have a lot of people who had been scarred. And it was fascinating and interesting struggle.
Now, can you give us an idea of some of the problems people were facing?
Yes, people who had definitely had anxiety, neurosis, or battle fatigue, but they were capable of various. For instance, we got quite a number of NCOs back to decent health. We were assisted by the doctor. We also had a physiotherapy center there, which also provided relaxation, and we got quite a number of NCOs.
What was the method of treatment then, you know?
Well, some men would have a routine which would consist of some parade, some physiotherapy, visits to the doctor, odd barrack fatigues, painting the walls, various things like that. And the jobs were coming through, the demand was coming through from one end, people that were wanted, and we were scanning our lists and looking at the people to supply them. For instance, one of the most useful jobs we provided NCOs for was that of tugmaster. There had been instances where a plane had taken off and left its glider behind, and they wanted to have tugmasters who could make sure that glider and tug were properly connected. We posted quite a number of men on that. We posted men to the Royal Army Education Corps. Difficult to remember now, but it was a question of going through the lists and looking at the list of jobs and matching them. And as doctors reported, we had a psychiatrist, of course, there too. as the doctors reported that people were getting fitter and more rested. Really what they wanted was a break from the battle more than anything else. So we got people going. And then...
Did you personally have a sympathetic attitude to them?
You had to. You had to. In fact, you had to be very, very tolerant, because some of them were almost bossy in their feelings. You know? Yeah. We actually took some of these chaps out onto the ranges for firing practice. We got them using rifles again.
Did many of them go back to active service, you know, as opposed to, you know, behind-the-scenes roles?
Funny enough, one or two of them went back into the SAS. One man, the sergeant, we got him to go and be a glider pilot.
So they completely recovered?
Absolutely completely recovered.
And you'd gone there, when had you gone there, do you think?
I went there in October, and I stayed there until the summer. Was it October? November, maybe, November, more likely, November. Stayed there until the summer when...
So you were there when VE Day came along?
I was there when VE Day came along.
Do you remember any particular celebrations?
Not, it was all very quiet. No, we were not. On the camp, nobody went mad. It was much more fun to listen to the radio and hear what was going on in London. No, it was very quiet on the camp. The blackouts coming off, that was the main item of celebration. Putting on lights and having to worry about blackouts, that was great.
And how did you feel about the end of the war? You'd had active service.
I was immediately under pressure from my company to go for a Class B release at that juncture. And I wasn't too keen on that, but I still was tossing up whether to take my regular commission, which I had been awarded, or whether to go back to my company. They wanted me to get a Class B release, which you could get if your industry demanded you. They said they would demand me if I would allow myself to be demanded. But I hummed and hawed on that one. And while humming and hawing, my application for Staff College went in again, and I got a posting to Staff College.
And that decided you?
That decided me not to go out of the Army at that juncture.